Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group. I think he's the best on the Pac-12. At Wilner Hotline on social media. Wilner, you wake up in the morning. What's the first thing you do that's job-related in the morning?
I basically get up and I go get some coffee and then I grab the computer and see what chaos has unfolded while I was asleep.
It's funny because I check to see what John Wilner's doing. That's my first thing.
Well, that's nice of you.
What do you make about the Pac-12 and this proposed boycott, Pac-12's response, all of that? Where's your head on it?
Well, I mean, generally, my head is with the players on a lot of the stuff, right? I mean, I think several of their proposals are both smart and reasonable. You know, the stuff that involves, racial justice, as they termed it. I think the Pac-12, which is very progressive on that front compared to its peers in the first place, you know, probably won't have trouble meeting some of the requests. And I think the issues that involve COVID and insurance, post-career insurance, I think are great ideas. And I hope that they can make some progress on them. I hope none of them feel like they need to opt out for those reasons, right? We're going to see, and we've already seen some players opt out because they have underlying medical conditions, right? That's an inevitability. But hopefully the two sides can come to an agreement that satisfies the players here. There are some economic components, though, that are basically non-starters, and my guess is most of the players realize that.
I think time is on the Pac-12 side. I think if they just, affirm the demands and let this process do what it is, the bureaucracy of the Pac-12, the fact that the NCAA would have to play a role, the fact that they might have to testify in front of Congress. I mean, at some point, the players who are supporting this movement sort of move through the system. Now you have new freshmen, and isn't that how college athletics has avoided unionization all along?
Well, that's one way, just the turnover, but also just from a legal standpoint, I think unionization would be difficult because you got 50 states and different. You got public and private. You've got different levels of NCAA. Jurisdiction. I mean, there's so college athletics is so sprawling that I think a national union is probably just not realistic. But the Pac-12 players can make some real progress here if they stick. They got to stay focused, though, right? They can't get dollar signs in their eyes and say to themselves, oh my gosh, we could get $250 million every year if they meet our demands, because they're not going to meet those demands. I mean, the presidents would shut down Pac-12 football before they forked over $250 million to the players. But they can get medical insurance that goes 6 years beyond their playing career, right? They can get COVID protections that make them feel more comfortable about showing up for training camp. They can get a black athlete summit. There's a lot of things that they can do. I mean, I think that one of the best ones is diverting 2% of conference revenues to help low-income black students and community initiatives. I mean, that's a great idea. The ultimate form that it takes, I don't know, but the concept is great. So hopefully they'll stick to the things that matter right now and not get distracted by those dollar signs.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. What'd you think of Larry Scott's response? You kind of went item by item. Is he really listening? Is he just validating them? What was his mission there? I like that he responded.
I do, too. I think he's really listening. And I think that this is, in some ways, this is the Pac-12's wheelhouse, because the conference, you know, since Jackie Robinson, right, has been by far the most progressive with social issues and racial justice compared to its peers. It's way out ahead. They have had a they've been out ahead on research into mental health and concussions. And they just announced a couple weeks ago that they are going to hire someone at the conference office to oversee diversity and inclusion. They're way out ahead of all their peers. So in some ways, the players have the best conference to work with, because the Pac-12 is going to have open arms on a lot of these issues.
Wilner, the conference schedule comes out. It comes out on a Friday. Immediately jumps out to me that they've got these, you know, rivalry games in the opening weeks and some key hot spots, and looks to me like they're trying to make sure they could at least get those games in. Can you put a percentage on what you think happens percentage-wise? You know, I know it's not 100%, but how confident are you that they can get 10 games in?
Not very. I mean, 10 games, I think that's like maybe 10, 20%. I think that's very unrealistic. I think that if, to me, September still feels, even though it's September 26th, and they moved it back a week. I think the LA schools were kind of behind that, because the LA schools can't even play catch yet because of, you know, the health restrictions. So they needed to move things back. I think if the presidents are so much of this comes down to the patience at the presidential level. If they're willing to wait, if they're willing to say, you know what, even if we have to start in October, we'll wait for that. Then I think they could get a decent season in. I mean, I think 8 games would be a perfectly legitimate season in this case, and they can start in the middle of October and still get 8 games in. But the presidents have got to be okay with that and not basically fall prey to the bad optics that are hovering constantly here.
Wilner, the conference last week, you confirmed Woody Dixon, who was at the center of the replay fiasco in 2018, is leaving the conference. Do you have a sense of why he's leaving and what the conference needs to do with its head of football? You have an opportunity here.
I have not confirmed why he's leaving. I just know what I read in your tweet, that it was his own volition. But I think this is a huge hire for them, right? I mean, Woody Dixon was he's a Harvard-educated lawyer who had a background with NFL salary cap. He's not from major college football, right? And neither is Larry Scott. And I think that the conference over the years has had some issues, in part because it didn't have anyone at the top of the football org chart who really understood college football and had been involved in it for years and years. So if I'm Larry Scott, I would like very much to get someone in there who gets it, right? Who can relate to the coaches, relate to the athletic directors on the football issues, has their trust, knows, can look out and Pac-12 football for the next 5 or 10 years, understand what the challenges are, and work to implementing policies that are going to help the conference thrive. They got to get a football person in that spot, right? Woody Dixon's equivalent in the Big 12 was a captain on Nebraska's 1995 national championship team. Pac-12's got a Harvard lawyer in that spot. That kind of speaks to the difference in philosophy with that hire. I think they have to have a football person.
You had a report this morning, and for people who aren't following John Wilner on Twitter, get yourself there, at Wilner Hotline, about Apple. There had been some scuttlebutt about Apple possibly being interested in the media rights for the conference. You say that's now a no-go. What do you know?
Well, in this case, I certainly know what I read in Sportico, which is a publication that covers sports business, and did a big story on just where is Apple in terms of getting involved in live sports media, because obviously they've got, you know, as much money as they need. They could, the article indicated Apple could buy every NFL team twice. They have enough cash. So there was a report in April from the Sports Business Daily that the Apple and the Pac-12 were having some conversations. The only person quoted in that story was the Pac-12 Network's president, Mark Shukin, which I thought was pretty telling in terms of the kind of the slant of the story. And now Sportico is reporting that Apple considered the Pac-12 as kind of an entry point partner for getting into live sports, and decided that Pac-12 just wasn't going to meet the needs, and so that didn't have enough of a brand, especially globally, to suit Apple with what it wants to potentially do. So that tells me that Apple is out as a primary partner for the Pac-12 in the next couple of years. And the question is it Amazon going to be any different? Is Facebook going to be any different? And if those companies come to the same conclusion Apple did, then, you know, it seems like the Pac-12 is probably going to end up with a partner like ESPN or Fox, which is what it's had.
Do they give up control of the network at that point, or is that going to be a tough sell to the presidents and chancellors who were told all along that, hey, this is a long play?
I have no earthly idea what they're going to do about the networks, and I think they don't even know. I really do, because so what do you do if you're going to go all in with ESPN? You say, all right, we're not going to, you can have all our rights and you can pay, you know, top dollar, and you can put our stuff on ESPN plus all of your platforms, traditional platforms, and ABC, and all the content on the Pac-12 networks, you've got that too. And they fold up the Pac-12 networks and they just shut it down after 12 years. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that, if they're going to want to do that. But at the same time, if you are going to continue to run the networks, you need somebody to run it. And would an ESPN be interested? I don't think so, because the content that's on the Pac-12 networks isn't going to be that valuable, right? So I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's a real huge, it's a huge question for the conference to answer in the next 2 or 3 years.
Wilner, the opening schedule comes out, mentioned it earlier, it comes out on Friday. We saw it in, immediately I looked at the Oregon-Oregon State game and said, oh gosh, they're getting that in early. What jumped out at you, like a top of the line gut reaction?
Well, I've just was looking more at the way they have structured the schedule, right? In other words, the collapsible early weeks. The way they've done it is, they have four teams basically grouped together for those first 2 weeks. So let's just say, the Oregon schools are playing the Washington schools in the first 2 weeks, right? Oregon, Washington State. All those teams have a bye on the same day, so that if any of those first games get canceled, they can be moved to that bye week because everybody will have that week open. And they've done that. They've created three different groups of four teams for those opening weeks so that they can put them all in the same bye weeks. I mean, it's a very smart look at it. They were originally, I think, going to have two of those weeks, but then they needed to move the start back because of the situation in L.A. So now there is that one collapsible week in October, and then they have that open week December 12th. In case games need to get rescheduled back then. And I think that's what they're looking at. For some of those rivalry games that are early, they are essentially assuming that they're going to move those back to December 12th.
John Wilner, you're the best. I appreciate you always making time for us. And anything you could tell us on the horizon? Can you give us a little tease? You're working on something this week that we need to tune into?
I'm trying to figure out what are they going to do about the economics. Right. If there's no football, I mean, that's, I think it differs from school to school in terms of what that dollar figure hit is. Right. I mean, Oregon State's dollar figure hit is going to be different than Utah's. But what are they going to do? Right. I mean, we're talking about potential. If there's no football, we're talking about, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars here for this conference. So How are the schools going to be able to manage that? I'm trying to kind of dig into that topic a little bit because, you know, it's realistic enough. I think there's less than 50-50 chance they're going to get a season in here. And who knows what's going to happen in the spring, right? You can't count on that either. So the schools have got to kind of figure something out.
I don't see them folding, right? I mean, folding the athletic department's probably not an option, but do they constrict? Do they, you know, as a general thing, I put you in charge of an average athletic department. Do you just run lean and mean and go into a deficit knowing that you can climb back out in 3 or 4 years, or what do you do?
Well, I mean, certainly you are thinking that if you could just get to that new media deal in a few years, you'd have money to help pay off your debt. But so many of these schools already have debt. I mean, UCLA and Cal are combined $100 million in accumulated debt. Oregon State's in bad shape. Washington State's struggling, you know, and some of the other schools are, you know, barely hanging on. So you don't want to lay off half your department. You don't want to cut half your Olympic sports. So it's a real dilemma. I mean, and that's why they're going to do everything they can to play, right? They're going to try to play until it is just impossible. And because they don't want the collateral damage is so immense.
Wilner, you're the best. I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on.
Stay safe, my friend.
You too. John Wilner, Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News. Leave it here. Arrived at the point of the show where the Culligan Water Cooler Report will take place. Join me around the water cooler. We'll talk about what people will be talking about.
Meet me at the water cooler. Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
All right, on Mondays, every Monday on Oregon Live, I do something called the Monday Mailbag. And it is the only piece right now of content that I provide to Oregon Live that regularly lives behind the new exclusive subscriber paywall. And for people who don't know, journalism costs money to produce. I don't work for free. My colleagues don't work for free. Editors don't work for free. It takes money and resources to produce quality content, like this radio show, for example. Judah Newby, you're a sports reader. Give me an idea from your perspective as you have seen the media landscape change. When you arrive at a website that has some kind of soft paywall, passive paywall, hard paywall, how do you navigate that?
My threshold might be a little bit lower than most simply because, A, I gotta have my sports content as a fan. B, you know, there's interest professionally to stay up to date with everything. And C, I want to support good quality sports journalism. So I do subscribe to some content that is behind a paywall. And I've noticed the exclusivity that's been interspersed throughout Oregon Live content, including your own, John. And yeah. Though I have yet to pull the trigger myself, I'm leaning toward that direction. I already subscribed to a couple of other content sites. It's too good to you know, miss out on. So I think I'm going to have to make that decision. That's tough.
It's interesting to me because on one hand, it's $10 a month to become a subscriber to the Oregonian. It costs you $10 for the digital subscription. That gets you access to everything. Now, there's a lot on Oregon Live that is not behind the paywall, including the vast majority of my columns, the Pac-12 piece. You know, but the Monday mailbag, they've said, hey, can we put, you know, this, make that a subscriber exclusive. I said, yeah, I think it's a good idea because I don't want to lose my connection with the larger audience. But at the same time, you've got a newspaper that's saying, look, our revenue model, our business model, if you want to invest in the coverage that we are giving to things you care about, like Oregon and Oregon State and Portland State and your community and the 12 zip codes in our state that have the most coronavirus cases. I mean, that takes resources, time, and money to produce the content. And the Oregonian, I think, does a better job than any of the major media outlets in the state. It is the most visited website by far in the state of Oregon, by far. And you have just the Oregonian as part of the larger corporate structure going, okay, we have to put some stuff behind a paywall. And it's almost, I kind of viewed it at the beginning, at the outset, that it was almost a reasonable plea to the reader saying, hey, look, as you know, advertising, digital advertising, regular old classified advertising is all shifted away from newspapers and in other ways. And so a portion of the revenue stream now has to be, will you subscribe? In the same way that a lot of people used to take home delivery of the paper and pay a monthly $14 to get the paper at home, you're now being asked to pay $10 to get access to all the digital content. Now, I have only the Monday mailbag behind the paywall. And I got an update the other day that among all the things behind the subscriber paywall, the Monday mailbag generated the second most number of people who went there, found out they had to subscribe, and then went and subscribed. So there's part of me that's trying to protect the rest of my columns and content from all of it ending up behind the paywall. But I'm also simultaneously aware that I'm going to be a draw and I'm going to be something that they're going to want behind the paywall. It's a tricky thing for me in the position I'm in. Ultimately, I work for the company, but they're listening to me and they're asking me. And I really respect and appreciate the fact that they're involving me in that discussion. And I'm going, okay, look, we got to, you know, there's probably a better strategy. I don't want my games columns living behind that paywall because, you know, I want everybody to have access to that stuff right away. But at the same time, I get it. It's a strong draw on the website. So for those of you out there who love to read my stuff, who could view it as an investment in journalism, if you care about the things that the Oregonian and Oregon Live are covering, $10 a month is cheaper than the subscription that I used to get when I got home delivery of the paper. I pay the $10 a month myself because I believe in the work that the Oregonian and Oregon Live are doing. But as of now, not all my stuff is behind the paywall. And I'm told that I'll be involved in that discussion moving forward. So I just find it interesting because I do subscribe to like the LA Times or the Washington Post, and I subscribe to Oregonian Oregon Live, and I subscribe to Hulu and Netflix. And so we all have to make decisions about the content that we want. I don't think it's any different in the case of a media entity, but I think it's a great discussion to have around the water cooler. That is the Culligan Water Cooler Report. It's brought to you by Culligan of Oregon. Anna's coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. We will talk about some sports and some other things. We're going to focus on late bloomers as athletes and people. And is that...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.